This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
We're not going to make a difference in the world with algae systems and the methods that we've come up with to make carbon negative fuel unless there are lots and lots and lots of people doing it.
Last week, we spoke with John Perry Barlow, Grateful Dead lyricist, environmentalist, and co-founder of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. This week on Sea Change Radio, the second part of my discussion with Mr. Barlow to learn more about his most recent project, an advanced biofuel startup known as Algae Systems. John Perry Barlow is my guest on Sea Change Radio.
I'm glad to be here. Here being used somewhat loosely.
So for our listeners, tell us, who is John Perry Barlow?
Well, I've always been pretty much the same guy, though it would seem not on the surface of things. I've had a number of what would appear to be extremely different careers. I've spent 20 years as a cattle rancher in Wyoming, during which time I was also writing songs for the Grateful Dead and working as a semi-pro environmentalist, running the largest, the only really credible environmental group in Wyoming for a good chunk of that time. And I started the Electronic Frontier Foundation clear back in 1990 when I realized that everybody was going to come to cyberspace and not quite know how to conduct human affairs there, not that we do now, but that it was going to be necessary to kind of protect the rights that had been guaranteed by governments in the past in the absence of any discernible or credible government. I've spent a good chunk of the last 20 years being what amounted to an internet guru, working on issues primarily around the redefinition of economic flows using models other than the intellectual property model, which I think is basically unworkable in digital media. And more recently, I have become involved in trying to come up with carbon negative and sustainable fuel sources, because I think that the perhaps the most pressing problem facing the species at the moment is how we're going to deal with our rapidly increasing energy demands in a way that doesn't also dump a huge amount of more carbon into the atmosphere at a time when that is probably an unwise thing to do. And also trying to contend with the fact that the oil that we have remaining available to us for energy use is in politically unstable parts of the world, and furthermore, not well distributed in many respects anyway. I think we need to in order to have equity in the species, we have to figure out ways to provide abundant fuel supplies for those parts of the world that don't have them now, since the fundamental element of economy these days, outside of increasingly information, is fuel.
So tell us about Algae Systems and where you guys are right now and a little bit about the technology.
Algae Systems is a startup. We've been at it for about a year and a half. There are just four or five people, depending on any given day, who were involved in the company. And we got started because we discovered that there was a group of folks at NASA Ames here in Silicon Valley who had come up with a way of growing algal biomass that circumvented a good many of the problems that have been inherent with that fuel source, primarily dewatering, which has been, an issue, and access to carbon dioxide and real utilization of the biomass with sewage as the nutrient rather than existing sugars. And it's a fairly complex system that they've created, but it can be made to be very simple. And it was, when we saw it, it felt like it was, as I say, the answer to a lot of problems. And we set forth to commercialize it, and we have been in the process of fine-tuning the integrated biorefinery and algae plantation based on their technology and other technology that we've both acquired and developed. And we're right now getting ready to put together a pilot operation, looking for the right site and finishing up our first funding round.
Can you tell us a little bit about the technology?
Let me back up first. I think that, you know, there has been, over the last decade to 15 years, there's been a lot of interest in trying to use biomass as a fuel source. And obviously, that's where it comes from originally. And, you know, it was a natural, it was natural for people to turn to that. And the first generations of biofuel were problematic in a variety of ways, not the least of which is that they were heavily in competition with agricultural land and water. It takes about 2,600 gallons of water to create 1 gallon of ethanol, for example. And that's just not a sustainable model. You've got, you know, almost 7 billion people on the planet, and they need the land that is good for growing food to grow food on, basically. So we were not interested in doing a biofuel that used agricultural land. Certainly weren't interested in one that used a lot of hydrocarbons in the course of both growing it, harvesting it, and processing it. And so we started to look at algae because algae inherently has growth characteristics that are extremely advantageous. The primary source of biodiesel in the United States at the moment is soybean. And you can get about 800 gallons per acre year out of soybean, whereas algae can produce as much as 20,000 gallons per acre year. Huge boost in productivity.
And not competing with food sources as well.
In the system that we're deploying, it doesn't compete with food sources because the system we're deploying is in plastic bags that float on seawater. So what we intend to do is use the sewage outfalls that are ubiquitous around the planet, putting out secondary and tertiary sewage, which is basically relatively clean of biological antigens, but is chock full of nutrients from the standpoint of nitrogen and phosphorus.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and my guest is John Perry Barlow. So where did the idea for algae systems come from?
This team down at Alpha, or down at NASA, had kind of assembled itself out of a group of folks that were involved in a variety of different projects, including primarily designing space toilets and other sort of total cycle environmental support systems for enclosed human support, like spacecraft. But they had recognized that one of the ways that you could dewater algae, which has been one of the principal problems with growing it as a fuel source, was by using forward osmosis and using the osmotic head between salt water and fresh water. So they have these enclosures that naturally ride the surface of saline water that you can fill with what amounts to fresh water. Tertiary sewage is fresh water with nutrient load. And the fresh water naturally floats on top of the salt water. And they created an osmotic reverse osmosis gas permeation layer within the enclosures that make it possible for exactly the right amount of carbon dioxide to be made available to the algae as they're growing. And you can put a, you know, fairly substantial surface area of these bags out on the ocean and take advantage of the sunlight and get the mixing and temperature control that you get naturally from the water. Which is mixing and temperature control. Continuous access for the algae to sunlight has been a real problem with growing algae in all these commercial systems that use photosynthetic algaes. Some algaes are not photosynthetic, but they require sugars that have been grown elsewhere.
Can you expand on that continuous access issue? I'm not familiar with it.
Well, one of the real limiting factors with algae is that they have to have as much exposure to sunlight as possible in order to grow at their maximum rate. And in the previous versions of photosynthetic algae development, they've tried to have various kinds of thin film systems or exposure systems that were either mechanically mixing the algae so that there was a circulation that kept exposing the cells to sunlight, or pumping through an enclosed bioreactor of one sort or another. And all of these things have been much too energy intensive, or they've been open in sort of a racetrack model where the algae are highly susceptible to contamination and infection. And also there's an enormous amount of evaporation. The advantage of this system is that we can capture the water that comes in so that it's not only is it not evaporated, but it's actually cleaned up. The algae remove the nutrients and you don't have the problem that you have in many places, coastal zones on the planet, where you're eutrophying the zone because you're putting nutrients into the water, which then become algae blooms, and as the algae blooms die and are decomposed by bacteria, the bacteria remove all the oxygen from the water, so you don't have any of the oxygen requiring life forms, vertebrates one sort or another, that you need in order to have a healthy ecosystem. So they came up with this system that would clean the sewage, grow the algae in a temperature-controlled fashion where the ocean was continuously recycling the algal cells and keeping them right next to the upper surface of the enclosures so that they have access to sunlight, and giving the algae a very enriched access to CO2. And originally, when we saw this system, we were assuming that we would put these in places where there was a concentrated CO2 source, like a power plant or a cement plant or something like that. But then we came across a scientist who had been the chief research scientist for Exxon at one point and is now head of the Earth Sciences Department at Columbia. A fellow named Peter Eisenberger, who had developed something that he calls the global thermostat, which is a a really elegant method for removing pure carbon dioxide directly from the atmosphere at about $30 a ton. And this can be put anywhere that you've got, you know, air, essentially. So basically, it's not dissimilar from the catalytic converter in your car.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. Now back to my discussion with Grateful Dead lyricist, environmentalist, and co-founder of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, John Perry Barlow, to discuss his biofuel startup known as Algae Systems. So you've been a environmental steward and an activist for many decades and are probably pretty well aware of all the different fuel options. Why did you decide to put your time and money and energy into algae?
First of all, because algae has the highest biomass generation rate of anything, as I said. Secondly, because after we discovered this system down at NASA, we found that there was a way that we could generate biomass that didn't involve agricultural land or water. That was a key component. And we also had developed a system that could take the entire biomass and convert it into mineral equivalent diesel and jet fuel. I'm not a big fan of biodiesel because it has viscosity characteristics at certain temperatures that make it really kind of challenging to put into a contemporary diesel engine, and you basically can't use it in a jet engine without mixing it thoroughly with, you know, at a fairly low percentage rate with regular diesel, because it tends to gel at the temperatures that it would encounter at operating flight levels. So we wanted to have something that we could turn into real diesel and real jet fuel. Chemically indistinguishable from what you get out of the ground.
Well, most of our listeners take flights, and they also go on public mass transit with diesel fuel, but a lot of people are looking for answers with their passenger vehicles. Do you see any future for algae in that?
Well, I think the answer with passenger vehicles is going to be electricity. We are developing and already have an enormous capacity for solar and wind and hydro. And, you know, I this is controversial, but I'm not anti-nuclear.
Stuart Brand, he's made a pretty compelling case for it.
Stuart and I are very much in agreement on this. I mean, I think there's an awful lot of superstition about nuclear energy that, you know, we're just going to have to get over and get over quickly, but that's a side point.
I'm speaking with John Perry Barlow, the Grateful Dead lyricist, the founder of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and currently working on a project called Algae Systems. Can you tell us a little bit about the competitive landscape as you're looking to dive in, and which ones you think have the best chance of succeeding?
At the moment, there are a bunch of algae startups. It's a little like, I feel like I'm trying to start a microcomputer company in 1978. You know, there's just a wild bloom of other algal interest. But in any case, basically there are two kinds of algae production. There's heterotrophic and autotrophic. Now, autotrophic algaes use photosynthesis. They're your basic green algae that people think of when they think of algae, and they convert sunlight into biomass, sunlight and nitrogen and CO2. Then there are heterotrophic algaes, and these are algaes that don't require sunlight. In fact, they can't tolerate it well, but they're very good at digesting existing sugars, you know, already complex molecules, and secreting lipids, which are actually quite similar to diesel or gasoline or kerosene. And in fact, when you drive around in your conventional automobile now, what you're driving on in large part is are lipids that were secreted by algae in the Pleistocene or the Jurassic or whenever. And, you know, there was an awful lot of algae on this planet for a long time. And under stress, those algae will secrete the basic components of modern transportation fuel. So that, and that's a well-known technology, and pretty well worked out. So a lot of the early phase algae companies are just creating algal biogenerators where they're putting the algae in with existing sugar, whether it's from cane or whatever, and they are optimizing for getting the algae to secrete lipids, which they only do, by the way, when they're stressed. So you've got to have a very tight control on the conditions in which the algae are being grown, and stress them at exactly the right point in their growth cycle in order to get those lipids.
What does that mean to stress an algae?
Well, it means to, you know, to make the algae to think, so to speak, that they're running out of food. You know, at a certain point in their development, you deny them nutrients. And, you know, like most organisms, they'll start producing fat immediately as a defensive reaction to, you know, stress in the environment. And you see this in practically any organism.
Humans.
Go to Houston. You'll see what I'm talking about. Any place where you got people under stress, and you'll see that they're producing lipids. You know, and most of those people are doing kind of what these heterotrophic algae is doing, which is utilizing high fructose corn syrup for lipid production. But anyway, that method of algae fuel production is the dominant one at the moment. But it has the problem of requiring already existing sugars.
I should mention, as you're drinking a Red Bull, you're talking about high fructose corn syrup.
But the, you know, one of the other big problems with this method of algae production is if you're just extracting the lipids, you have a huge amount of the biomass left over. And there's not much that you can do with that doesn't create an environmental problem. And the dominant way of dealing with it is to convert it into livestock feed. Well,
but it's not a traditional waste stream like as in terms of like a wood pulp.
No. It's a difficult thing to contend with, and when they turn it into livestock feed, a huge percentage of it is then converted into methane, which is five times more disadvantageous even than CO2 as a greenhouse gas. I mean, if your objective is trying to deal with climate change, you don't want to have a system that automatically produces an abundant supply of more greenhouse gases to overwhelm whatever you might be taking out of the atmosphere in terms of carbon dioxide. So we just don't find that to be a very attractive method. Now, with other photosynthetic algae or autotrophs, most of the development so far has been in closed bioreactors that are land-based and have these problems that I was referring to earlier in making sure that all the algae is continuously exposed to maximal sunlight, and also is controlled from the standpoint of temperature. And a closed system next to, say, a power plant has a temperature buildup that is extremely difficult to control without a lot of energy expenditure, and also the agitation and mixing of the algae for sunlight exposure is energy intensive. I've seen where the wolf has sucked by the silver stream. I can tell by the mark he left you were in his dream. Ah, child of countless trees. Ah, child of boundless seas. What you are and what you're meant to be.
This is Alex Wise, and you're listening to Sea Change Radio. Now back to my discussion with John Perry Barlow. All these crossing cycles makes me think of that we're all trying to somehow utilize our own form of the photosynthetic Krebs cycle to get something.
Well, we are. We're basically trying to come up with the most efficient way of doing energy production the way energy production has always been done on this planet. You know, which, you know, there's damn little energy here that doesn't come from the sun, ultimately, whether it came from the sun in the Jurassic or next year. I mean, there are people now who believe that there's a certain amount of energy that's being outgassed from, you know, reactions in the core of the planet.
As a co-founder of the digital rights advocacy group, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, you've been a staunch advocate of the free flow of information. But let's say some company in Southeast Asia pirated the technology used by Algae Systems. What would be your position then?
Well, frankly, that's something I hope will happen. I mean, we're not going to make a difference in the world with Algae Systems and the methods that we've come up with to make carbon negative fuel unless there are lots and lots and lots of people doing it. I mean, it's not going to really matter enough unless practically, you know, every coastal city on the planet is converting its sewage into diesel and jet fuel.
That's going to take a lot of companies and a lot of
money. And that's going to take an awful lot of companies and an awful lot of money an overall process that I certainly would not want to be the sole proprietor of by any means.
I mean, there's been so many great gains in hydrogen, for example, but the infrastructure to actually deliver that to operable vehicles running on hydrogen is a huge
battle. It's not
battle.
Not there and is not going to be there in the foreseeable future. I wish it were because, I mean, you know, part of the first thing that we get out of our biomass is hydrogen and carbon monoxide.
If people want to learn more about Algae Systems, John Perry, how would they?
Well, you can go to our not terribly well-completed website, or they can contact me at Barlow at Algae Systems. I think that's probably the best way. I mean, we're
it's algaesystems.com?
Algaesystems.com, yes.
Well, we'll link to that on the site.
Yeah, great. That'd be good.
John Perry Barlow, thanks for being with me on Sea Change Radio.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by David Murray and the Grateful Dead. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Kuva Coffee Company, Bounty Growing System, Sungevity Solar Home Specialists, and Invisible Structures, a sustainable paving company. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.